Hello everyone and welcome to this week's episode of Suck Talks. I'm Craig Dale, your host, and together with our special guests, we will take a deep dive into the topics, challenges and opportunities facing SAP users today. Please make sure you subscribe so you never miss another episode. Today, we're discussing the three M's of positivity: mental health, mindfulness and motivation. And this will be a two-part episode, so welcome to part one. I'm delighted today to be joined by Sophie Bennett, Simon Nichols and Matt Champion. Welcome to you all. I know you all very well and I'm a huge fan of what you do. So what I'd like you to do, if I may, slightly different to what we normally do on this podcast, is I would like you to introduce yourselves, if that's all right. A quick elevator pitch, so to speak. So let's start with you, Sophie, please.
Hi, Craig. Thanks for having me on. Motivation is my big thing. So I'm a motivation expert, a leadership coach, speaker, dressage rider in my spare time, an author and a visiting lecturer at the Cranfield School of Management. So I stay pretty busy.
Thank you. Wow, I can imagine. So do you have any downtime?
Yeah, make downtime. I think you have to, right?
Very true, very true. And Matt?
Thank you, Craig. Yeah, I'm Customer Innovation Director at SAP in the UK. And I'm also a business coach and a mindfulness teacher at SAP's Global Mindfulness Practice. And I'm very passionate about mindfulness in life and mindfulness in the workplace. And I'm also a board advisor for the Mindful Workplace Community, which is a community that helps to bring mindfulness into the workplace.
Thank you, Matt. And Simon?
I'm at Simon Nichols, and I am the founder and wellbeing director of Thrive, who are SAP User Group's mental health partner. And it's mental health has been a passion of mine through personal circumstances, but also that ability to be able to help people think differently. I'm also very lucky enough to be part of the Mindful Workplace Community that Matt was talking about as well. And you know, any tool that we can use to help our mental health get better.
Thank you all very much, and thank you for introducing yourselves to our listeners. Okay, as we move on, I was just thinking the other day, way back, as I was casting my mind to this podcast, on a business coaching diploma I did many years ago. And I did that because I wanted to help people around me. And as part of that, we had a lot of reading. And I read Sir Alex Ferguson's autobiography, which I thought was excellent. And, you know, not just because I'm a bit of a fan of Man United, but I admired Sir Alex. And also the main thing for me was the learnings on his management style, how he looked after his team, not just the players, and got the best out of them all. So my question to each of you is, what has been the best biography or autobiography you have read and why? Now, if biographies are not your thing, which book? I'll start with you, Simon.
We're going to be talking possibly a little bit later about anxiety and anxiousness. And when you asked that icebreaker question, I was racking my brains to think, actually, I don't read many biographies and many autobiographies. And so this overwhelm started to appear, and I was going to struggle to answer the question. And then, like all good podcast hosts, you gave me a let. You gave me that ability to go down a different route, which is my favourite book. I'm going to go a little bit controversial here, because I'm an avid reader, and I it's one of my mental health strategies, I guess, is to lose myself in a book. But my favourite book is the one that I'm in now. And it doesn't have to be a particular book, but it's what I'm immersed myself. And to give it a title, the one I'm reading at the moment is Richard Osman's The Thursday Murder Club, which is a fantastic book. It is a non-fiction, so it doesn't really fit well with your biography, autobiography question. And I've already listened to it as an Audible book, and I loved it so much as an Audible book that I actually went, well, my wife went out and bought it for me for Christmas. But if I could just finish the question with the book that I'm in now.
Good answer. And you did give us a title anyway, so it does add to my reading list. Thanks, Simon. And Matt.
Thank you, Craig. Yeah, it's difficult to pick one, just one. But I think the one that really sticks out for me is actually a mindfulness book. And it was written by Mark Williams and Danny Penman. And it's called Mindfulness, Finding Peace in a Frantic World, an 8-week guide. It's particularly special to me because I read that book during a time when I really needed to find some peace in a frantic world, and it really helped me out. So that would be the one that I would pick.
Oh, excellent. If you have his email address, maybe drop it down to Boris Johnson. I think he could do something like that at the moment. He's had a bit of a couple of years, hasn't he?
Absolutely.
And Sophie.
Mine would be an unusual one that I've just finished reading called Shantaram. And it was it was an autobiography of a guy who escaped from prison in Australia, got involved in the Bombay Mafia, fought in Afghanistan for the Mujahideen. And it's just so deeply honest. And he talks in there about just how he copes with some really challenging situations. It's about 800 pages, so that was a bit of a marathon. And on a more practical one is a personal development book I read about 25 years ago, and I still reach for it on a regular basis. And it's by Jim Rohn, and it's full of little personal anecdotes from him, and it's called The 7 Strategies for Wealth and Happiness. And it's a delightful little book because it's very centred and very quiet. You feel a sense of centeredness reading the book. So that one's an absolute delight. Old but good.
Well, thank you all very, very much, because, my main aim of that question, purely selfish, is to, add to my reading list, and you've helped me no end. Thank you. So thanks for those insights. And, as we now move on to our main topic of conversation, although within your answers, we've already, touched on some areas our listeners can go for help, but which is the 3 M's of positivity. The fragility of our mental health and positivity has been brought to the fore through the pandemic over the past year, which we're still living through. And, here at the User Group, we've been supporting our members with many sessions on positive mental health and mindfulness, working with both Thrive, as Simon said, and also, Matt, your team within SAP, really to help our members through. And, one of the messages that crops up from time and time again in helping us combat stress that I see is, stress can be caused by the pressures we're feeling. And one of the topics, as I mentioned, that came up is building resilience. And what is it, and how can we build it, is my question to you to start off this conversation. So if I may, I'd like to start with you, Simon.
Yes, it's interesting, Craig, and I'm going to ask a question back to you now. So when something goes wrong in your life, do you accept it head on? Do you bounce back, or do you fall apart? Where would you say you sit on that spectrum when something goes wrong?
I think it would depend on what it is. If it's something really small, I can probably get quite angry straight away and then dial it back. But if it's something major, I will deal with it very calmly, which just seems completely opposite to the way it is. But that's what happens to me. I think, I bounce back, and, one of the things I often think about is, it's how you relate the things that happen to yourself, and then how you deal with it.
You're absolutely spot on. And when we think of resilience, so we will touch upon mental health resilience, obviously, and mental strength, which is a fantastic word that I love to use. And we start to think, but what is resilience? So when we look at maybe what the definition of resilience is, and we look at, you know, it's about harnessing our inner strength. It's about that ability, as we said, to rebound back from that setback or that challenge. But actually, it's more apparent when you haven't got resilience, and that's just resilience in life. And as you said, life experiences, and maybe we'll talk about that as we weave through this podcast. But if you lack resilience, and what we're talking about here is maybe your overwhelm of your thoughts, then actually you might dwell on those problems. You might feel victimized. You might feel that it's all happening to me. You might actually turn to unhealthy coping strategies because you can't cope. So when we start to think about mental resilience, and this is where what you're going to be hearing from Sophie and Matt in their respective fields is, it's actually to build up techniques, coping strategies, coping mechanisms that help you to distract from those thoughts that are coming in. And when we talk about resilience, it's not just the thoughts that are attacking us. As you said earlier, we're talking about stress. And when we talk about stress, we love stress as humans. We're meant to have it. It's our defense mechanism. But when you have too much of it, then it starts to get a bit bad. And when you start to measure pressure and tension, then actually you start to think of resilience in a different way, because resilience actually starts to become vulnerability. What things in my life make me vulnerable? And the only way that you can lower your vulnerability is to build up all of those mechanisms, and we're going to be hearing some fantastic ones later, that can actually distract your thought process. Because what we want to do is we want to build almost a shell around all of the stuff that's flowing in, all of the stuff we think about on a daily basis, finance issues, relationships, children, parents, brothers, sisters, family, friends, and the whole multitude of stuff that's gone on in the last year. I don't call it 2020, I just call it the last year now, just to put that to bed. But when we actually start to put things in place, we're building a shield. We're building a shield from external forces, but actually we need to build a shield inside so we can actually stop those thoughts going down the wrong path, and we can then actually start to catastrophize and have negative thoughts. So for me, resilience really is building up your kit bag, your tool bag, with things in it that can actually make you think differently.
The UK and Ireland SAP User Group is a not-for-profit membership organisation designed to help you to get the very best out of your SAP investments and make your job easier. Our focus is bringing the whole SAP community together so our members can learn, network and collaborate to improve their organisation, providing an independent channel through which to influence SAP. For more information and a special offer for our podcast listeners, please visit sapusers.org/pod or email support@sapusers.org. Enjoy the rest of the pod.
Thank you. Any thoughts, Sophie?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm involved in sport as well, as you know, and I'm involved with horses. And there's nothing greater to help you with your resilience than something that has absolutely no respect for your personal space, unless you feel strong on the inside yourself. And the biggest thing they teach me every single day is that you have to learn to fail gracefully and not beat yourself up about it. Because learning to fail is a huge part of resilience. If you can not have the monkey on your shoulder telling you all the things that you don't want to hear about yourself every time you make a mistake or fail, if you can find a way to distract that monkey on your shoulder and give it something better to do, and you get comfortable with failure, the learning process just accelerates. And then you can feel good about yourself. It's a huge part of motivation, is not allowing yourself to be demotivated beyond a certain point. I mean, we all fluctuate, and there's no question we shouldn't beat ourselves up if we're not motivated 24/7, because it's a cycle. It's impossible. You can't live like that. So we all need to have some downtime. But yeah, finding techniques to get the monkey off your shoulder and learning to be okay with your own failings or failures if it's a process that you don't get quite right every time. It's a huge asset and it's a skill, not a gift.
Thank you. And Matt, anything to add?
Yeah. In the course that I teach, which is called Search Inside Yourself, we talk about mindfulness plus emotional intelligence, and resilience is one of the topics that we cover. And we talk about it about, you know, it's essentially the ability to overcome obstacles along the way, you know. So we all have them. Nobody has the perfect life, no matter how much they might say they have. You know, things get thrown in our path every single day. And we have to, you know, we can be trained actually to cope with those. And some of the ways that we do that from a mindfulness perspective is actually trying to develop a level of inner calm through using mindfulness techniques. And I'm sure I can talk a bit more about that later in the podcast. But it's developing that inner calm and then also looking at emotional resilience. So how do you perceive success and failure? Similar to what Sophie was saying a moment ago, they're emotional experiences, you know, and we can actually become more aware of our own emotions and more in tune with what's happening in our body. You know, there's a lot going on physiologically in our body that isn't always happening in our heads. You know, feelings, emotions manifest in the body and then we rationalize them in our heads. So how do we understand or how do we frame the stories that we're telling ourselves? And part of that is increasing your self-awareness and your self-management. So not avoiding or denying that you're feeling a particular way about a setback or about an obstacle that's happened, but actually learning a more skillful way of understanding that and, you know, accepting that. And then that's when that moves into cognitive resilience as well. So how do we actually explain these things to ourselves? That has a profound impact on the way that obstacle or that setback is then framed in our minds and how we, you know, look back on that or whether that lingers with us or not. And then also the optimistic versus pessimistic mindset, you know, and some people are more naturally optimistic than others. Some people are slightly more pessimistic, but actually being aware of how we're explaining that to ourselves, you know, is it glass half empty or half full? And, you know, what were the lessons and things that I learned and took out of that? So, a lot of different levels that I've gone through there, but there are, you know, ways of explaining and responding in a more skillful way. And obviously mindfulness can help us to do that.
Yeah. Oh, thank you, Simon.
I really want to touch upon, I mean, obviously, Matt and Sophie spoke very eloquently there, much, much, much better than I did around the resilience in terms of what it is. But both of them, I think, really drew upon experience. And that's experience through life, experience through situations that have happened before. And one of the best, and I've probably overused it on various podcasts, but it's that whole thing about, you know, we're all in the same storm. We've all been in the same storm globally, but actually people are in different boats. People are in cruise liners, people are in yachts, people actually haven't got even a life belt and they're just sort of scrabbling for, but what we've seen actually is some of those boats have been stopping and picking other people up, which has been fantastic to see that. But then we sort of get to the point, don't we, where because we all know, and you know, it's quite clear from looking at ourselves here, we're very fortunate on this podcast, we can see each other. We're all different. You know, we've got a few of us got glasses, some of us have got hair. We're all very different in our appearance, but we've all very different in our life experiences as well. So why does something affect us? Why does that person over there seem so resilient? It's as though nothing can affect them. And we actually say we have to really go back to everything that we've experienced. Now, as Sophie said, I've never experienced being kicked by a horse. But my cousin has told me what that experience is like, and it's something I never ever want to go through. But once you've been kicked by a horse, and you might be able to tell me if this is correct, Sophie, is you very rarely get kicked again because you've built up a life experience, you've built up an element of resilience to not being on the floor in agony and having a hoof print on your stomach. And I just think we really have to remember that it doesn't, we're all here now, you know, this is 2021, and we all got through, for the most part, where we are today. But we all did it in a different way. We all had a different journey to get here, based on our experiences.
Yeah, thank you, Sophie.
That's a really good metaphor, actually, Simon, because when you're kicked by a horse, and I haven't been kicked by a horse or had my foot stood on for very many years, but some people just become terrified of horses because they replay that moment over and over again in their heads. And other people observe horses differently and become more spatially aware and start getting better at picking up the cues about what's going to go on. They start becoming more aware of their environment. And that's a metaphor for pretty much anything we learn in life. Some people respond with fear and get stuck in a loop and never go near a horse again. And others, once they start seeing the finer points of something, get almost addicted. And that applies to pretty much anything. As your sensory acuity goes up, as your awareness goes up, everything changes. The situation hasn't apparently changed, but your response to it has transformed. And that's what's so exciting about actually getting older, dare I say it, that you just have more awareness about what's going on around you and I personally spend a bit less time looking inwards and a lot more time looking outwards as I've got more mature, let's be polite.
That, you know, some great topics there and strategies and, you know, areas where our listeners can really delve into that to help themselves. And I'd just like to turn to you, if I may, Matt, on this. And, you know, you teach a course at SAP, I believe, called Search Inside Yourself, which covers mindfulness, emotional intelligence and neuroscience, which sounds, you know, quite a useful combination. Can you tell us a bit more about that and, you know, and why SAP's perspective of why this is important in the workplace?
Yes. Well, we see it as critically important. The course that I teach and the practice that I'm involved with from a corporate perspective is actually in our leadership and development department of SAP. So it's got close linkages to our wellbeing program, but we actually see it as a core leadership skill. And when we say leader, we mean, you know, leading from where you are. Leaders are everyone in the business. And the reason why we think mindfulness is important is because when people are aware and when they're present and when they're, you know, in control and not in that autopilot mode, then they're able to show up better for them from their own perspective and also for colleagues as well. So it creates a more kind of balanced and mindful working environment. And then also from an emotional intelligence perspective, it's really important that we recognize that EQ is actually emotional intelligence is actually a really critical skill in business. And then the neuroscience that actually supports it is really compelling. So the course that we teach is really it's kind of a personal transformation awareness journey. So it blends mindfulness and emotional intelligence together and actually helps people understand a little bit more about what makes them tick. You know, who am I? How do I move from being in that kind of autopilot mode that we're in quite a lot of the time to being more aware of my own my own thoughts, my own feelings, and then how do I actually, you know, get more into control? So bringing mindfulness and emotional intelligence together is a really powerful combination that helps people to, not only just in the workplace, but in life, really. And the neuroscience that sits behind it, the reason why that's kind of exploded in the past 10 or 15 years is because scientists are actually able to put people into fMRI scanners and actually see the impact on people's brains. And there's been a lot of research on the physiological impacts as well on health. So it's an interesting one because, you know, some people come to the course and they just want to learn more about mindfulness and try and develop a practice in their own life. Some people come in very skeptically and they want to understand the scientific benefits of it before they even consider doing anything along those lines. And then you get people that are just kind of curious in between. So it provides a balance. And there's a really good book that the listeners can take a look at if they're interested in it, called Search Inside Yourself. And it was actually developed by a software engineer at Google who used some of his research time while he was working at Google to look at whether he could bring mindfulness, emotional intelligence and neuroscience together. And he did. And now it's a course that's not just taught by SAP, but taught, you know, globally. And it's something now that's very important at SAP. And in fact, it's our most popular course, bar none. And we've got a lot of training. You know, we're very fortunate that we have a good range of training that we can have at SAP. But it is one of the most popular courses. And many people then go on to join mindful practice groups and local groups, meetups, and connect with colleagues from all over the world. And then the one thing I would finish off by saying is, last year, or even to date now, obviously we've taken everything completely virtual. It used to be an in-person course. And we've delivered more courses than ever because we've been able to provide that online to people. It's actually been more accessible for people. And yeah, it's been a really great way of helping employees through the past year. And the demand keeps going for it. So yeah, thank we you. See it as and absolutely I, critical.
Yeah, I can imagine how much we, cause it's been more important than ever over the past year to try and maintain a stable mental well-being and remain centered, as you mentioned. And earlier you mentioned being a board member of the Mindful Workplace community, and Simon, you said you were a member of that community, I believe. You tell me a little bit about that, please.
Yeah, so this was an initiative that I was very lucky enough to attend the opening. I think this was just before we weren't allowed to see each other in person before, so it has moved into that virtual world. And you know, for me, what was so, you know, not only was Matt one of the panel of experts at the front, but it was just the passion that, and we had people from HSBC and people from the Home Office were talking about just how important mindfulness is for organisations. And you know, it's one of the things that I really didn't pay much attention to. And I've always been a nature boy. I haven't, not quite down the dressage route of Sophie, but I've always been outside in nature. And for me, fresh air, vitamin D is part of my resilience, is part of my building. But I think I went through life for about 25 years not being present, not being in the moment that Matt so eloquently talks about. And I think the beauty of the community actually is it's a raising awareness now in the moment, being present, that organisations will get more. And we don't mean more. And I know that Sophie's going to talk about productivity. And, you know, Matt, my favourite is that, you know, positivity promotes productivity 33%, you know, an increase in that. But it's not about doing things more. It's not like you're going to get more stuff off the production line. What it is you're going to get an innovative, you're going to get a creative, you're going to get a workforce, and let's not call them a workforce, you're going to get your people are going to feel better about themselves because they're aware of what's going on around them, and not just the company vision and the statement and, you know, the mission values that we all hold dear in the corporate world, but actually you're going to get people who want to come to work for you. Matt.
Yeah, I was just going to add to what you're saying there, Simon. One of the things that I didn't mention a moment ago is that we actually have the data science as well to back up the fact that participants on this program, people that practice mindfulness, actually have reduced absenteeism rates, and we see an increase in the business health culture index and a number of other measures that we can correlate to people that have been on the program as well. And I think, you know, some people who are not so numbers driven don't need the statistics. You know, I don't personally, but obviously in the corporate and in the business world, it's important to be able to measure that we're having impact. And I think that's part of what I'm trying to bring into the community that you were just talking about, is that this can actually have real business impact positively for us as employees, but also for the business as well. And I think that's something that's slightly misunderstood sometimes. You know, people they think about it as just an intervention or just something that you do when people are in difficult situations, which of course it can help with. But actually it's something which can develop the maturity of the workplace, you know, develop the atmosphere and the environment for teams. If, you know, people showing up for each other, people being more authentic, people just being more present, it makes such a huge difference. So I think that's part of why we want to help other workplaces to do the same, really.
I think as well, Matt, as you said there, is it's anything, any intervention, any well-being practice that's put into an organisation, the return on investment is 5 to 1. For every £1 you spend on putting something, an initiative like mindfulness, you will get a £5 return on investment. I mean, where else can we get that in this modern infrastructure-driven world?
Thank you. Thank you both. And we're coming towards the end of part one, and we could have probably talked for another hour on this subject. But I'd just like to leave the final word on this one to Sophie before we close down this episode, if I may.
Well, just really interesting observation from both Matt and Simon talking about presence. And I think one of the things mindfulness does is you learn to make time, create time for yourself, rather than just find time. Because we're all really busy and the pressure's on us. You know, so many people are working from home, homeschooling, caring, trying to do a job and 50 other things. And without the tools or sort of permission to make that time and create that space, you need that. And again, it's a skill, and you need permission from your employer, from yourself, that that's an okay thing to do. It makes a huge difference.
I think that's a very interesting comment, and I can relate to it. I go for a walk on a morning, and you know, I never thought I'd be a person to get up at 5:30 on a morning, but to enable me to get the start of my day that I want by going for a walk in the local park out in the countryside, I have to do it at that time. And I've kind of trained myself that is now my body clock knows it's time to get up and get my backside out the door, no matter what the weather, and get out with nature. I'm not quite forest bathing yet, Simon, but you know, getting out there, it just starts my day off so well. So I can really relate to that. Thank you. But you know, thank you all very much. As I said, I'd like to close down this part one of this two-part episode, and thank you very much for your insights. And you know, we've discussed lots of things around, you know, mental strength, resilience, you know, mindfulness and vulnerability, and just finishing there with creating time for yourself. So we'll be coming back in part two, so make sure you do join us to listen to part two. We'll be moving on to positivity, motivation, turning negatives into positives. So please do not miss that episode. So we hope you've enjoyed this conversation so far and found it valuable. If you'd like further information on the user group and our wellbeing sessions, please do visit sapusers.org or follow us on any of the main social media platforms. So until the next time, stay safe, stay well, and keep washing your hands. We'll be right back.